bottom of the list.
Well, Greensboro is the one town in the state that still
Like,
plows people's driveways.
any updates to the agenda? Hearing none, can I hear a motion to approve the agenda?
I'll second
All in favor?
it.
Perfect. And welcome everybody online. Great to see you on this chilly evening. And I don't see any public comments. Does anybody have any from the committee here? Anybody have anything to start off? Okay, perfect.
You can hear us, correct? Okay.
Great. And next on the list is approve the excuse me, September 25th, 2025 minutes.
I'm so moved.
I'm in a meeting right now.
I'll second. I'm
Awesome.
in a
Thanks,
meeting right
Mike.
now.
Oh, sorry. Any further discussion?
Sorry, I missed
All those in favor? Mike Strady.
that.
Hi.
Time.
Perfect. And then we have the accountant coming on, and we could just once he or she comes on, we can go back to them so we can move ahead without that. That's fine. If that everyone's okay, keep us on task. So I think we'll jump ahead to the bylaw changes. There were a few things that again need some more updating, and everyone did a great job last time, but it sounds like there's a few other things that you want to tweak. Dave, do you know the timeline you're thinking for the bylaw changes as far as if you're staffing, you have, I know you've got a lot going on right now.
Right now, I think we can. When's our next meeting, Jen?
It's in March. Let's see. We have a full board meeting in March. It's currently the 26th.
So it would be the full board making the changes, correct? Or the executive based on the current?
Think it's the full board that has to make the changes, if I remember.
Yeah, so the next full board meeting. We can have the changes done by then,
Okay, so
right?
it'd be March or June, whichever you prefer. Okay.
To June.
June would be a preference. Yeah. Why don't we put June?
Yeah, it's board of June.
Great. And then we have some executive committee meetings before then. So once you're starting to work on them, we could actually weigh in if that's helpful or help you with that.
Okay. Yep.
Great. Anything else on the bylaw changes? Okay, so we'll look for doing those in June. Wanted to talk to you about the executive committee meeting schedule. What I've noticed in the past, in April, the meeting has always fallen on the week that is school vacation. And then in May, it's always the Thursday before Memorial Day. So, what I was wondering if everyone is okay just kicking it back 1 week. So, in April, it would be April 16th that we would have our executive committee meeting. And then in May, it would be the 14th.
Excuse
Well, Thursday is the night that every committee that I'm on meets.
Okay.
Select board for sure, right?
Well, the planning commission for sure. But I'm okay with, that'll cut down the number of meetings that I have to go to. So
Well, the second question, Hope asked this, and I remember it was both Hope and I. What do you think about switching the meetings to 4 o'clock versus 6 o'clock, so that we would have a 4 o'clock executive committee? Is that a tough one? I know. I think it's Farley that you're that's
yeah,
for
I
you.
it would be a conflict with work. I could do 5 o'clock.
Okay, that might work a little better. Has anyone feel about that?
Like,
Yeah. Is there any morning times, Farley, that would work for you?
probably not, unfortunately. I'm just hesitating. It could be possibly Wednesday mornings. As long throughout the semester, I think I've got some flexibility on Wednesday mornings, but that's subject to change depending on students' needs. So.
Maybe we could try for 5 versus 6. Then, people would get it done and you can go home and have dinner versus
I'm
trying to
talking
get
to them
out.
more too.
What do you think about that, Mike? Is that helpful, Mike or Mike?
Fine with me.
Perfect. So let's try those dates. So it'll be April 16th and May 14th at 5. And then the March 26 meeting is a full board meeting. And we were wondering about having it at Due North and maybe doing a little bit of a mixer or something just to everyone get to see the space.
Dancing.
We could have entertainment. I don't know. We were just wondering if everyone would be up for that, especially since we've taken on Due North and it might be great for people to be able to see it. I didn't know what people's thoughts are. And it's actually closer for some of you.
Oh, I mean, it's fun. I've been there, but I don't know. There's not a whole. Well, I guess the second floor's got quite a bit of space. You could kind of wander around. You have the hors d'oeuvre tables, different places. Maybe people could get pushed around or pulled around, whatever.
The third floor's got a large conference room. It's got a big sofa and some open space.
Yeah, because that's been
Third
opened up
floor.
maybe since the time since you were there. They've gone to the third floor now too.
Oh, I didn't
I've
know
seen
that.
it.
Yeah, it's a lovely space. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, we'll plan on that and maybe try to do a little bit earlier on that one as well. So perfect. Thank you. Hey, was that the accountant that I
That's
see?
Ron. Hey, Ron. You're on mute, I think.
Hey, folks. Hey, Dave.
Welcome. So we were wondering, having you come and go over the audit report with us, if you could give a high level overview, that would be really helpful. I think we've all reviewed it, but your
Sure.
questions.
So, Dave, you want me to share my screen? You want me to just hit the highlights of it? I know it by heart, so.
We could start with the highlights, I think.
Okay. So just a little introduction. Ron Smith, hail from the great state of Vermont. Hail from the great town of St. Johnsbury. I have a homeowner in Brighton, Vermont, so know all about the great state of Vermont, and certainly any questions that you have, of me, happy to answer. We live, eat, and breathe the world of government, nonprofit in Maine and Vermont. So we do 75% of all the school systems, 80% of all school systems in the state of Vermont. Same in the state of Maine. Do like two-thirds of all the municipalities in Maine, half in the state of Vermont, and we do a bunch of you guys in the state of Maine and in the state of Vermont. So we know what's going on out there. So feel free to ask any questions. And it's really been an interesting past few years. And typically we have this conversation, in December. As everybody knows, our federal government went through a shutdown last year, and it was delayed and interest delayed and issuing the federal compliance supplement until around Thanksgiving. So we had almost 175, 200 audits in a standby holding pattern, until they came back from their lockout to issuing that. But the product really never changed, from the time we put it in your hands to the time that when they released their final compliance supplement. Simply said, you guys got our highest opinion, audit opinion as of June 30, 2025, an unmodified opinion, which is the highest that we can offer. If we found any areas of fraud, defalcation, disagreements with management, we'd have to issue that a modification in that report. There were none, we're pleased to say. So and really kind of like a thing to note is Judy Butsons. This kind of literally ends her tenure. Her longstanding tenure as the finance director. Let me just say, Judy was a professional to work with. She did a great job really delivering us information, you all. I know she's kind of counsel of NVDA and mentor for Tina, so it's been a great pleasure to work with her. And once again, you can kind of see her imprint and stamp as she passes the torch on to Tina with this product. And really financially, you guys, the delivery, as you guys have all read your product, you can see you really didn't skip a beat in 25. Your equity went up from about 1.5 to $1.7 million. We tested the Brownfield grant. We had no federal compliance issues or matters. Any question, costs, none. One thing that I will mention, if you actually read that report, one of the very last pages, you guys will see that you were classified as a high risk, organization. Let me just tell you what that means. Okay. There's a look back period of 3 years ago. 3 years ago, there was an issue with procurement, if my memory serves me. No question cost, just a compliance complement. That actually falls off now after this audit. So you'll go back into the low risk category. But all it means simply is we have to provide a threshold of coverage of 20% for low risk of all the federal dollars that you spent, you know, or 40% with high risk is what that means, based on about a $1.1 million of expenses that you had, of federal expenses. Brownfield was the one that we picked, and you had that 40% coverage. We didn't have to test any other additional programs, you know, but that's all that means. That doesn't mean you're bad. That doesn't mean anything. And quite frankly, that term falls off next year, you know, after the 3 year look back period is over, you know, after the end of this audit. Financially sound, went up about $200,000. And a lot of that just has to do with the timing of how you guys receive your money and how you guys spend your money. You know, that certainly, and I had a chance to meet with Dave, Tina, and I forget who in your finance committee that I had the pleasures of meeting, you know, before, just to kind of, you know, just talk about some of the highlights of it. And, you know, and I told them at that meeting, one of the biggest things I think and challenges that you're going to face is really kind of getting Tina acclimated to the world of fund accounting, governmental accounting, nonprofit, kind of that hybrid accounting, you know, that you guys are. And indirect cost allocation is probably going to be the biggest challenge. That's a big part of your business, you know, certainly. And as I shared with everybody, and I'll share with you all, I think that's going to be her biggest challenge, is just getting caught up, you know, in the fundamentals of the accounting world out there, especially when it comes to indirect and really, really just the governmental and fund accounting, that hybrid that you really are, you know, out there, you know, at NVDA. But financially sound, really no compliance matters, you know, that came to our intention doing it. Judy did a great job. Tina was kind of facilitating the audit process, working with us. So just well done by them. Hats off to them. And, you know, and again, financially sound, financial improvement of about $200,000 from the year before. Your reserves are pretty solid. You know, you guys have some money, you know, talked away, you know, down the road, as you guys can see in your footnotes, as you read. And I believe it was about $800,000 into two really, really big areas that you guys have been focused on in the past few years. And they are regional development. Melamine, I know, is a big one of about $650,000. And then you guys had some land for sale that's restricted for about $131,000. But, you know, really almost a mirror image, you know, of 25 to 24, you all. So good year, an improvement. So.
Yeah, Fred, anything you want to add as a treasurer, anybody else?
I had to visit with Ron. He was here delivering the audit report.
Great. Wonderful. Any questions anyone else has from the executive committee?
I just want to say congratulations to us.
And I'll tell you guys, one thing about Tina, she's been reaching out too. I know she's, you know, really kind of, you know, taking an attachment to try to further her understanding with the software and just the nuances of the profession, taking some online classes that, you know, I've talked to her about and all that. So she's really invested, you know, in that position and learning, and she's got a great mentor in Judy, you know, really to reach out to you all. So.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Is there a motion to approve the financial subject? Great. Further discussion. All those in favor?
Aye.
Stay warm, you all. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Take care, Dave.
Thank you.
Hell of a nice guy.
And he's very lively for an accountant.
Yes.
Never seen an accountant that lively.
He's got great staff. We use them, and his staff are phenomenal.
Yeah.
Are they as lively as he is?
Yes. Actually, they're fun. my town clerk was not looking forward to the audit last year, and she's like, I actually like this firm. They were actually fun to work with.
They're fun.
I think they do about half of the other regional commissions in the state now.
Yeah, it's good to kind of
switch up, you know, with those folks looking at your books and, you know, get the individual perspectives occasionally. I'm glad you did it.
Yeah.
It's good.
When was the change from?
Well, we didn't actually change because we went after procurement and they were the only firm that was our current firm. And they were the only one to respond out of 14 firms. They did was they changed the people in the staff that actually worked for this year. And they had a whole bunch of new people.
Yeah. But I think it makes sense to, you know, if you can change, get a different perspective. Yeah.
It's hard. It's something we don't have. We don't have audit firms up here because we searched far and wide to get somebody.
I agree.
Perfect. All right. I'm going to jump back over. Thank you, Jen, for the approval of the November unaudited financial reports. Is there a motion to approve those?
I move we approve the November unaudited financial report subject to audit.
Sure.
Paul seconding it. Is there further discussion or questions? All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you, Jen.
They can't go any further down.
So we're down to the flu mapping update, and I know that we got a very thorough memo that came as well, and just want to make sure we thank you for all the work that you did. Even pulling that together was really, really helpful, but want to make sure we are allowed to have a conversation and everyone has weighed in and questions that you have.
Okay. I brought the issue up in an invitation from Liam, and I think that was issued on a 14th or something like that. And so, you know, it was just a couple of days before I could get in here to meet with him.
Yeah.
And Allison joined us and we went through stuff. And then he gave me the methodology, which I had not seen before. And I asked for what were the criteria for putting various areas of land in the various designations. And so this, to me, was very helpful. And I also learned that it was advisory in nature, and having understood that, also that the Land Use Review Board, you know, obviously is looking at it from that, you know, methodology perspective to look at consistency across the state. Now, the thing that bothered me was in the rural area, and I just noticed looking that there seemed to be a lot of rural general, especially in the area that I'm familiar with, which is Sutton. And I know that there are five conserved parcels, large parcels, agricultural and forestry. And I did not see those all depicted. And that was troubling to me. And I couldn't understand why that would be. And it would be, you'd think, in the conserved lands, because if you look at the criteria for conserved lands, it says you're going to map those. That's the first thing you do in rural general is you map the protected lands. And so I was kind of surprised that had not occurred. And even if they are protected lands, why those then would be put into rural general as opposed to rural ag and forestry, which is the basis for almost every conservation easement that we've got, certainly in the town of Sutton, and I would postulate probably throughout the whole state. And so I remain troubled with that sort of representation, because I think looking at those in the future, post Dave Snedeker, post all of us, somebody's going to say, well, that's what's mapped and that's what's in the regional plan. And you need to be consistent, municipalities, all of you, with the regional plan. And so I see that as down the road potentially having a real impact. And I know what all the protestations about that doesn't affect local zoning and all that. And I'd say, you know, yeah, that's fine today. But maybe I'm paranoid, but it doesn't necessarily mean somebody's not out to get me, especially if I believe in local control.
I'm with you.
And so.
Did you talk to Liam about it?
Well, yeah, I talked to Liam about it and Allison. And, you know, this memo captures some of their, you know, their response. Mm-hmm. And Liam said, well, we can modify the subscript under rural general. And at first it had, you know, rural residential. And I said, well, that's just an invitation to develop. And, you know, I've got about 80 acres that are agricultural, and at least for corn and forage production. And obviously through the years that changes, you know, as NRCS programs require. But it's true, I have fields that are less than 20 acres within that 80 acre block. And the only thing I can figure out is maybe, you know, when you looked at them, you thought, well, those are too small to farm. Well, individually, yeah, if that was an individual ownership, it would be, but it's part of a much larger ownership and you know, accumulation. That 80 acres is, you know, a very nice agricultural lease, which, you know, the farmer's happy to renew every, you know, 5 or 7 years, whenever the lease comes up. So, and I'm looking at, you know, wondering if that's an issue across all of the NEK and the NVDA planning area, because when we got done with the Friday meeting, Liam brought up the areas, the future land use maps in Lamoille County and in Franklin County. And I was surprised when I looked at it, it was all pretty much green. I mean, there weren't much rural general areas that I could, I mean, that's, I didn't, he'd show it to me for very long, but, you know, I was struck by the fact that it looked like they had categorized most of their stuff. It was either, it was conserved or it was rural ag or forestry. Mm-hmm. And so that reduced the proportion of rural general, which is, you know, sort of the catch-all if you can't come up with some other categorization. And so, you know, going back and looking through the methodology, I feel like maybe it wasn't really applied, certainly as, you know, just a plain reading of it would suggest it should. And, you know, if you look under rural general, it says, you know, you start off by mapping the other areas within the rural, which is the conservation area or the ag and forestry areas first. And then you look at, you know, your regional and local land use plans and your priorities and your local plans to help guide what the balance is going to be amongst those three rural categorizations. And so it looks like it's quite permissive. And I think what we see here is I know you're under the gun. You've got to get her done. And I appreciate that. But, you know, if this goes and it becomes your approved regional plan, seems to me as though you'll play hell getting it fixed if it's broken.
And I think we're going to weigh in both of you on the process and from the what we've been dealing with as far as the constraints.
Yeah, I totally appreciate your concerns, Paul and Mark as well. And we did take the email that you provided last weekend and sat as a group and discussed it. So I invited Kathleen here tonight, and yeah, I see Liam just joined us as well.
I'm happy that you're, I mean, you guys have been nothing but helpful.
Yeah.
I want to say that.
But you're correct that all the original planning commissions worked from that common methodology, which we were supposed to do, and also a statute. And each, even though you've looked at Franklin or Lamoille County maps, each RPC did their methodology maybe slightly different. Mm-hmm. And Kathleen, or maybe you can speak to that.
Yeah, there are some slight differences. I'd say overall they're pretty minor, but the goal is for each region to be consistent with those minor changes and how we've done things. And can I keep them? So some of your other points, I think so sort of a overarching picture that we need to keep in mind is that all of the rural areas are in tier two. And so more or less they're interchangeable versus the tier one areas, which is the village centers and the downtowns and all of that, which is where
most of your development's going to occur.
Yeah, and it's where the different designations really matter. And so the rural areas, none of them are inviting or opposing development. That comes down to the town's zoning. So areas that the name rural conservation is probably a bit misleading, in that it they're not in an easement necessarily or something like that. And rural general does happen to be a bit of a catch-all for right. what's left over.
Well, what they tell you, Kathy, is that if you look at conservation, the first thing that almost map the protected land. And that's, you know, that it even tell you where the GIS layers are that you want to use. And you know, I'm looking at Sutton, and I got five, you know, conservation easement, large parcels. I mean, and they're not all mapped. I don't understand.
So just because it's in an easement doesn't mean we put it in conservation. We really looked at what was happening in that area. And so to sort of what the working land is. So if it was a forest or if it's agriculture, that would put it into forest and ag.
It wasn't. That's my problem. I think it's an oversight. And I read with a plain reading, I don't think you would have done what happened. So I'm asking how that oversight occurred. And I guess I'd give you a chance maybe to look at it again.
Maybe I'm not understanding. What category is that land you're referencing in?
Well, you could either put the conservation easements, as you said, in conserved, or you could put it in ag forestry.
Mm-hmm.
But you do that in preference to putting it into rural general.
It's currently in rural general?
Yes.
So you're saying? Yeah, so another...
Right across the town.
Well, another part of this process when we brought the draft maps to towns was when we're looking at all of this data spatially, you know, you can miss things. So I think we used the example of a big lawn versus a small agriculture field.
80 acres, my lawn's not that big. I mean, you can tell everything. And I would say, you know, looking across the town of Sutton, if it's a field, it's agriculture. It's under cultivation or under forage production.
The way it's mapped, rural general are like basic guidelines, I guess you could say, of how we're going through it, is it's either lower development housing, so more sparse housing, or large fields. And so if we can't tell, like when we went to towns, we asked, are these fields actually being hayed? And we can't see that. And so towns have the opportunity to give us that information. And very few towns took us up on it or gave that feedback.
Let me make a point in that regard, because I asked the Planning Commission, they were meeting last night, and I said, you know, what happened during that meeting? And I've got the minutes, which Liam very nicely printed out for me. And it makes no reference to that. What would have been a question asked and an answer, you know, no documentation that was even addressed in the minutes. And when I asked the question last night, they said, we thought they were asking about whether we wanted to use the town of Sutton zoning map or the future land use map. And we told them that we wanted to use a town of Sutton zoning map. And we've been pretty consistent about that ever since. And so they totally misunderstood the question, Kathleen. And I you weren't there, I know, but I mean, you know, it was Kyle and Liam were there. But I mean, they were three people that were there on that meeting in the end of May. And they were adamant that, you know, that question earlier, if it was asked, they didn't understand it. So that's, I think, an issue.
Right. Well, correct me if I'm wrong, Kathleen, but when we had the meeting with the staff earlier this week, I think when you were doing a lot of your outreach visits to the towns, you might have some parcel designated as rural conservation and many other rural ag, but when you meet with the community, they don't want to be limited to seeing they take conservation and then you can't do anything with it, or it's limited to ag and forestry. So then there was a request to go into rural general. And that's,
I think, you know, the fact that they're in current use and these parcels are also conserved lands, and they're spelled out as far as management for ag and forestry, would tell you that nobody's asking to put them in rural general at all. They want to conserve them.
But yours is in rural general, right? So in...
Well, it isn't just mine. I mean, there's five easements in Town of Sutton, and it seems to me none of them are in, you know, properly codified.
But what's your concern with it being just in rural general, in the sense of looking at the parameters today, that there's no real difference amongst those designations today?
Except that it really is, because as they're described, you know, when you've got rural general, you know, it's the only one that describes residential, which to me, you know, doesn't really fit in with your categorization based upon land capability. Because you can put houses pretty much anywhere, and, you know, with mound systems if you have to. But to me, it just is an invitation to develop. And Sutton doesn't, you know, they're an agricultural community. They want to stay agricultural, and they've got the farms and the intent to do that. So, you know, I don't know if this is also in Newark. I asked the question in Greensboro. I asked the question to Mike, and they've got in Greensboro, they've got a lot of conserved lands, and he doesn't know whether the local planning commission rendered that as somehow conserved lands or as ag forestry.
So the conserved lands are mostly referring to areas such as the river corridors, or steep slopes or wetlands. It's more restrictions by the landscape than an easement or something like that.
Well, explain something, and why is this the first or the second item in mapping that you're supposed to take all the lands from the conserved Vermont Protected Lands database and put it in there?
Yeah, maybe Liam could.
Yeah, I can talk to this. That. We do use the Vermont Truck Detected Lands database, but as we explained in our memo, a lot of our decisions in making the methodology were decided on at staff meetings of NVDA planners and how to best appropriate it to our region. So in the Protected Lands database, we took lands that are publicly owned, whether that's a state forest or the Nauhegan Basin Wildlife Refuge of the Silvio Conte and Essex County, or a wildlife management area in Wheelock, and those are going rural conservation. But
this also says right here, it says private ownership too. I mean, it's, you know.
Okay, can I please finish my thought?
Sure.
And then also, you say that everyone who has a conservation easement wants their land shown as rural conservation in the future land use map, and that has not been my experience. I've talked to dozens of individuals across the three counties of the Northeast Kingdom who want their land in rural general because they think that has the least restrictions, which is not the case. The rural general versus rural conservation does not have any restrictions. But by and large, most of the comments we've received from individual planning commissions are that they want more rural general, not less. So we've tried to meet that, and also... Where are they going with this? When you said that the town of Sutton misunderstood our request to ask them to identify working lands on the future land use map, there are a lot of misunderstandings on this map. But if we ask someone a question twice in a meeting and then twice in a phone call a couple weeks later, there's only so much we can do. And it's unlikely that 100% of local planning commissions in the Northeast Kingdom will have 100% understanding of this map. That's frankly unrealistic at this point. So we try to meet people where they are and provide them with information, but particularly when there's 4 or 6 months between communications with a planning commission and then the next time we talk to them, a lot of that information gets lost in the shuffle.
I take your point. I understand, and you know, the fact that they didn't understand, I think, still obtains. I mean, and we do have the town database for all the land parcels that are in the current use or UVA program. And you know, it would have been easy to provide all those to you mapped in 5 months for sure.
We did look at all of that, and that was one of our first steps, is to look at that. So it is considered.
Yeah. I guess, you know, I feel like, you know, down the road, we may be sorry we did this.
Well, I think another piece that we haven't touched on yet is that these regional maps will inform local maps, but and I'll just use Sutton as an example. If we call it rural general and you want to call it rural conservation or rural ag and forestry, you're still going to be consistent with the regional plan when you can do your own local maps, because you want to do local maps as well.
So I guess I hear that, Dave, and yet it seems to me as though my planning a direction when I did the town plan, and we've done twice, I've led the effort twice, that, you know, one of the requirements was that it had to be consistent with the regional plan. That was, you know, going back now.
And that still would be consistent. If you changed all of your rural areas to rural conservation or rural ag and forestry or rural general, you're still going to be consistent with our regional plan no matter what.
Because they're all considered the same tier two.
Yeah.
Well, I'm concerned about the other RPCs that have done it the other way. The most frequently used word in the methodology document is consistency. Yeah, the purpose, the stated purpose of this was to achieve consistency, and you know, two of our neighboring regions have done it differently from us.
I would say largely that's not true, because the tier two lands all fall into one bucket. The only way that can change is if tier three or the road rule impacts it. But the tier one areas and all the major developed areas are very consistent throughout the state.
We're talking about the treatment of tier two area. We're talking about
rural.
We're talking about the rural.
Correct. But what I'm saying is that they fall into the same bucket. You could take a parcel and it be rural general, and the one right next to it be rural conservation, and they face the same consequences unless tier three or the road rule comes into play.
Nice. So this is how all the maps you've done were treated the same?
Yeah.
And they've participated in working groups with all the other regional commissions. So Aspen County might look a lot more like ours than Lamoille or Franklin, for instance, or Rutland, that might fit in there.
Rutland County has a very similar methodology to us. And frankly, the expectation that all of the regions have the exact same interpretation of the official methodology is interesting, because regions are very different. So Chittenden County approached their map very differently than we did, because Chittenden County is very different than the Northeast Kingdom. There is 23 uses of the word consistent in the future land use methodology, but there's other words used far more, like rural. So I don't think the consistency has to be 100% consistent between the regions, much like between the local map and the region map of a town. There is some flexibility within consistency, especially because, as Kat has said a couple times, the rural land categories don't have any different consequences from one to the other. So it is consistent to have some areas mapped as rural general and some rural areas mapped as rural conservation, even if they have the same ownership.
Well, you'll never get consistency, 100% consistency across Vermont. I mean, there's so much. Northeast Kingdom is so different than Chittenden.
I take your point, and thank God for that.
I'm with you again.
let me just say that, you know, that seems to me as though the purpose of a lot of this is to preserve productive forest and ag lands in perpetuity going forward. And why not put that in there to start?
being a forest and being in rural ag and forest doesn't grant it any protection. It says what's there right now, and if it's a massive forest, that's unlikely to change in the coming years.
Depends on how many condos you can get in.
Well, you've got
Sure,
my
but you
you've got
have.
my 80 acres of rural agricultural land. You know, could be a lawn.
You've got it in rural general, right?
Yeah, I guess I think that's a misapplication of your methodology.
I think the hard part is they were getting pushback in particular from people not wanting it into rural conservation, right?
I hear that, but it seems like they've been pretty resistant to all kinds of pressure.
What are the chances that these FLU maps are going to be adopted for use in satisfying Act 59? Act 59 is the law that says that
30 by
30
30.
by 30 and 50 by 50.
I've heard concerns about that, and no one's admitting that that is actually going to happen, but I agree with what you're saying.
The
So,
first time I heard of that was at the Sutton Planning Commission, but no other RPC has indicated that that's likely to happen, and the legislature has
well, the
not passed any
RPCs don't
laws
know
saying
if
it
it's
will
going to
happen.
happen. You know, the legislators know whether this is going to happen, and you know, if this provides an easy way for them to accomplish that goal, to use these maps to demonstrate compliance with Act 59, then you know, I predict that that's what they're going to do.
My take on that is, even if that were to happen, that's very much out of our hands, and that is an issue to take up with legislation because,
You can't predict that.
yeah.
I agree with you.
Well, yeah, that I don't know. It seems like we have a lot of information that that we've chosen not to use, in spite of the fact that the methodology suggests that it be used.
Yeah.
I can't, Liam, can you speak to that? You did the most of the mapping, so.
Yes, I've done 85% of the mapping. Well, ultimately, when you are talking about, oh, well, someone can build 80 condos on rural general land, but not rural ag and forestry land. Well, actually, if they're zoned the same, someone could do it easily, the one just as the other. And we did not use all of the current use data because not all current use data is for rural agriculture or forestry purposes. There are current use enrollments nowadays for ecological services, and we determined that something that is rolled in current use for ecological services is not should not belong in rural agriculture and forestry. Additionally, we did look at all of the data, but it is true that when we looked at the data, we did not necessarily come to the same conclusions as everyone else in the state of Vermont, including some of the people sitting around your table. And it was what we decided made the most sense for this map, because again, the primary intent of this map is to identify areas that qualify for Act 250 exemptions or that qualify as for inclusion in the state's designation program, formerly known as the Village Centers Program. So while we did spend lots of time mapping these rural lands, in our conversations with communities, this focus has really been on the village centers because that's what really has implications. And like to imply that we did not use all the data at our hands, I think is a bit of a stretch because we did use it. Perhaps we did not use it in the same way as other regional planning commissions, but that does not mean we did not use it at all.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I don't see that.
No.
Yeah, that's fundamental. You know, are you going to believe what he's telling you? Believe what you can see on the
Right.
map.
Well, if Northeast Kingdom put conserve lands on there and nobody else did, that would be like.
I think everybody else did, and all the state lands are you know, I had a question about why it was Granby all green, you know, and it's because it's state land, right? So it's all conserved land.
No, Granby is mostly green because it's mostly above 2,000 feet. Most of Granby is owned by private timber companies.
Well, I think we were talking about pretty much the wildlife management area, and
Yeah. So we're kind of this, I know there's some disagreement, and I know the employees worked really hard on it for a long period of time. How do you feel comfortable moving forward? Are you, at this point, we know that there's no difference between how it's designated, but I know you're concerned about in the future. And we're also up against a tight time frame to get this done for some real important projects that it could impact.
I guess, I would like to see if you have to submit it to the LURB on the 31st in order to meet your deadlines and not lose qualifying funding for, village centers and town centers and stuff like that. I would ask you to do that with the caveat that we would like to go back and refine this, before it becomes part of the approved regional plan.
I think we can commit to that.
And I feel like,
Yeah.
this is significantly important because, we've got to designate those lands for what they're actually being used for. And there isn't a decent sized field in Sutton that's not under agriculture.
If I may, I just want to say that especially Liam and myself, we've spent hundreds of hours mapping this region.
I understand.
And we have not taken the responsibility lightly. We've put a lot of effort into this.
No question. No question.
Liam and I, along with Allison, when Kyle was here, everyone, we were constantly checking in to making sure that Liam and I were both mapping the region consistently, as well as meeting with the GIS staff of the other RPCs. I think Liam was doing that about weekly for quite a while. That only slowed down once some of the RPs started submitting their data to the LURB. And so we have put a lot of effort into being consistent in-house and consistent with the other RPCs. So I just
That's, I
want to put that
understand.
out there.
It still doesn't satisfy, how the methodology is supposed to be applied.
I hear you. We'll have to go back as a staff and relook at the methodology, talk with some of our regional planning counterparts, understand if they did something similar.
And bring that back and
Bring it
continue the
back.
process moving forward, though.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't make a point of it if I didn't think it was really, significant potentially further down the road. And, there's so many uncertainties, like, Act 59. I don't know, what that entails, and you don't either. And when we've got this thing and it's already part of an approved regional plan.
It's not approved. Yeah.
No, I know that.
Okay.
But what I'm saying is when it becomes approved, everything's got to be consistent with it.
We really want to make sure that you as employees understand, we appreciate the work that you've done. We
Yeah,
know
I
it's really
do.
hard when you get to this place and all of a sudden
I get
there's
that.
doubts within the work. So
I think,
please don't look at this as a reflection of not
yeah.
appreciating your work.
No, I appreciate you saying that, but I also want to say, like, this is on a cycle as well. We don't make this once and it sits forever. It is on an 8-year cycle. And again, things we can't predict the future. And I think a lot of the issues that is being had and how this might evolve in the future is not something the RPCs have control over.
I take your point. And having said that, we already know that the amendment mechanisms are, it looks like they're going to be kind of a pain.
They're trying to change that already.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's way too difficult. We have to go through
Yeah,
our
really.
entire 6-month reprocess again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wonder if I could speak to something. One of the things I'm thinking about as I'm hearing all this is, I think we have to acknowledge also that we're a very small organization that covers a whole lot of towns, the most towns in all of Vermont.
Right.
And with such a small staff, I'm concerned about, the expectation of really refining land in all these little towns without having enough staff with enough time to do that. When we talk, and I'm not a planner,
So I don't know the details of that. But, you know, if our staff are already spending hundreds of hours, all of their time talking to other RPCs, doing the work, researching, and, you know, and they've put their absolute best in, if we're asking more, like what more do we need to give the MBDA staff so that, you know, this can actually be accomplished?
Yeah.
Well, good point. I
And
think.
good point. And I think, well, as you go back and do your reflection, the staff may be coming back. If you need more resources to help, we want to make sure you do that. And we don't want it to be that we don't
I
appreciate.
know Kyle went back to
Yeah.
New Haven or wherever,
Yeah.
and you know, I hope you're going to find somebody to fill his shoes.
He was sort of have already.
Yeah. Yeah.
That wouldn't didn't take very long, did it?
Well, she took over our emergency management, Molly Doctor. And then they cut off our emergency management funding, but she's also a planner, so she's able to step in that role.
Good. And I know these are hard. It's when you're dealing with the public as a whole, and you're trying to get through things, and you want to make sure that people are happy, and we're doing things, you know, that way. But it's hard. It's hard. So we'll do some additional work and come back again. And
And again, just to close it, I mean, the whole exercise seemed to be about identifying tier one areas that we're going to have lesser restrictions as far as development. And the rest of it just got thrown in there.
Whatever you want to do with the village town centers, that's fine. Put skyscrapers up as long as they're not over my.
The underlying zoning still applies. Conservation easement still applies. And so development's just not going to happen because of these maps.
Right. And I just want to make sure we've got people online. Is there anybody, do you have anything you want to weigh in online as well? Please feel free.
I would just like to point out that, you know, I don't envy the staff having to deal with all the planning commissions either, because I mean, at least I know how ours are. These are elected people or appointed people. They don't necessarily have any planning skills. They're not a great help when the MBDA staff come and ask questions. There's nobody there that knows how to answer those questions. So to kind of put these expectations on them, I think is a little excessive.
Anybody else? Thank you, Mike. Okay, let's move forward to
Thank you too.
the True Temper update.
Okay. The True Temper site update. You may remember that this was an 8-acre brownfield site, essentially right in the middle of St. John's downtown neighborhood area. And the board authorized us to move forward with purchase for redevelopment as long as we kept NVDA's safe environment life from environmental liability and also not additional cost or any additional costs. We've moved quite a way on this. The first thing, we applied to the state's umbrella program, which is the state's liability limitation program for brownfields, and we're accepted. So the property is now enrolled in that when we step into an ownership role. We've done a phase one update, which is needed prior to taking ownership, so we're protected from the federal CERCLA liabilities. We have an EPA cleanup application that's due on the 28th, which is next Thursday, I think. We have an acquisition, operation, and management agreement with the town of St. Johnsbury and the housing developer who's coming in behind us after the site's cleaned up. So that's all in place. We have a purchase and sale agreement with the sellers. We're expecting to close on Monday. And if we take ownership of the property and don't get the EPA grant, there's an unwind where the property goes back to the current owner. And thus far, the town and the developer have covered all of our transaction costs, with the exception of the EPA application, but we paid for that with our regular bonding funds. And so we've had a title review, we have an insurance, title insurance, we have liability insurance quotes coming in now, and expecting to close on Monday. So yeah,
That was quick.
there's a lot of there's certainly a lot of work and a lot of legal documents.
Dana from the Caledonian asked me a question today, and I referred him to you about the purchase of the property. Are the sellers getting compensated for the sale, or is it just handed over? How is that financially?
There's a 20 is it $25,000 down payment, which is non-refundable. And then there's a balloon payment at the end if they're actually going to sell the property. But there's some transaction costs and interest-only payments through that period, where we're cleaning up the property and until it gets sold again.
So yeah.
And then those funds will be recouped at the sale,
Yeah, they are the
the sale after the cleanup.
yes. So the funds at risk are all put up by the town and the developer. Nothing on our end.
They'd be happy just to get rid of it.
I would imagine so.
I think that was the question Dana was asking, as far as the sellers being compensated for a property that's had issues and has issues.
It's been vacant for almost 30 years.
And what would that compensation be? Really minimal.
It's minimal, yeah.
Yeah. Any other questions on that work? Thank you, Dave. I know you've been really busy as far as with that. So I've personally been leaving you alone and not reaching out, because I knew you were on that one. Update on the Due North.
I'll speak a little bit on this, but Fred's actually been helping out quite a bit with it. So NVDA would continue working with Vermont State University to assume the management of the facility. And there's going to be things like a lease transfer at some point. We're looking around March 1st, I believe.
Yeah, we March 1st now.
What does management of the facility mean? Does that mean the facility or the function of the organization?
But everything.
Okay.
Yeah. So
Basically, we're taking the whole thing with the existing manager. He's going to leave the college, become an NVDA employee.
and who is that?
Owen somebody.
Owen Davey.
Yeah, nice guy.
Yeah.
His sister used to work here with us as a bookkeeper for a period of time. Hannah, if you
Okay.
remember her.
I don't remember. Okay.
So yeah, we've been discussing within weekly meetings now, discussing the lease transfer, project staffing, and management of the space. We have grant funds through the EDA to cover management and operations for 2 years, and after that, hopefully, we've built up enough revenue to make it self-sustaining. Otherwise, we can just walk away.
How does it earn revenue?
Memberships is the
Yeah.
primary way that they get paid.
$20 a day, $100 a month.
And there's a few office spaces to lease too.
Yeah. There's conference room that
And if we have a meeting there coming up, we'll be able to show
Yeah.
everybody.
So the MOU for the project has been to the college. They didn't have any questions. There were a few tweaks, but nothing major. We've got this lease assignment agreement from the landlord. I read it. I'm happy with it the way it is. So pretty much the big thing left is changing the utilities.
And yeah, the college has
Yeah.
been, I think, fairly forthcoming with everything we've asked.
Yes,
Yeah.
they really want to get this off
Yeah.
their plate.
Why?
Just changing direction in what they do. It's grant funded. My understanding, they're in year one of where they should be in 2 years. They just haven't grown it and advertised it.
And they're retreating to go back to their core functions
Yeah.
as a university, which does not include some kind of a project like this. And
Yeah.
they weren't actively using the facility themselves.
They have a Forest Service grant, I think, that was part of this, tied in somehow. I've looked at everything, and there's no real risk to us. I mean, if we had to close it down, there's money to pay the rent for
Yeah,
through 27.
our auditor is asking us to keep it separate from NVDA as
Yeah.
it's kind of an arm of NVDA.
Any other questions, people online? Great. And your director's report.
I sent that late in the day, sorry. It seems to be always the way that happens, but I've printed some copies here if anybody didn't get one.
We should rent you another day.
Yeah. So I talk a little bit about brownfields. We're implementing our new EPA grant, which we got back in July. It's about $1.2 million. We're working on site assessments, phase one in St. Johnsbury, like the True Temper and others. Also in Newport, Barton, Orleans, East Harwich, and Glover. So we're kind of getting more across the region than St. J. or Newport focus, which is good.
Can we get the Sutton thing finished? The pipeline pumping station?
It's still that guy from California that owns that property, but he hasn't told us what he wants to
He
do
sort
with
of
it.
stayed out of communication.
Yeah, he has been on
He's looking
vacation.
for money to fall from the sky or
Yeah.
something.
Yeah. The report also mentions the regional plan and mapping, which we've kind of discussed already. We are intending to submit the full draft report to the LERB in April for their review. Municipal Energy Resilience Program, which is MERP, you probably heard about that for some of the municipal buildings. Carter and mainly Carter's been working with the towns, making sure that they're implementing the projects where they had their audits. And so far, it's going so good. Some towns are a little slower, so she's reminding them that the funds have an expiration date. The new one we're working with is a municipal water system inventory. This is through the Vermont Bond Bank. So the Vermont Bond Bank reached out to the regional planning commissions because a lot of times they're the lender for a lot of these municipal systems, especially when they want to do expansions and things like that. But they didn't have a good idea of how the systems are actually performing, the extent of the systems, number of users, things like that. So we're doing an inventory of that. We, having a large region, we have also have the largest number of systems. There's 34 municipal systems in all, including fire districts.
Mm-hmm.
So Molly, our newest staff person, has been going out with Carter and collecting all this information from the towns directly. So, and then some industrial park activities. Vermont Renewable Gas is still pushing through their Section 248 permitting, which is never ending. The developer is now working with Lindenville Electric and VEPSA for a different opportunity than other than standard offer. The building in the industrial park that was formerly BHS Composites, a Canadian company that we had recruited years ago, they sold the building, and now we have another company that's interested in buying it, and it's a metals manufacturing company, and also from Canada. But they're going to come in and create, I think, 40 new jobs is what they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So we're doing the brownfield assessment piece for them right now, and I think they do have a lender to purchase something.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last one for the park is that we did an appraisal of our building in the Charlie Carter Business Resource Center. And right now we're talking with some current tenants about a potential purchase of the property. I wanted to have that appraisal in place first. And then we would take funds ideally and put them into another project.
Oh, okay.
Building project. Transportation work, Liam is working with, he worked with Newport and Derby on a bike and pedestrian feasibility study. And Liam has indicated that they're going to have a public information meeting in Newport in February. So there's that. And then we're just, Doug helped the town of Lunenburg obtain a better connections grant for the Gilman Village revitalization plan. So they're going to, I think Gary Briggs sent me an RFP that they would help like us to help distribute to get a consultant on board for that. And the last two pieces are the True Temper and Due North projects, which I already talked about. So and I'm happy to take any questions or
any questions online, shaking heads no. Okay. Are there any other business?
Oh, I will say, Carly, I was at Craftsbury, Sterling College, for a meeting this week to talk about a future reuse of the college campus, potential uses. So, we're just so you know, we're put into that group now.
I'm sorry, I just lost you there for 1 second. What was that, Dave?
I was pulled into it was a multi-organizational group to come out to Craftsbury Sterling College to talk about the future reuse of the college campus.
Yes.
Potential
yes.
opportunities. So NVD is involved in that now too.
Okay, great. Good, thanks. Yeah, we just had a report out at our faculty meeting just yesterday, and then we're really looking into it. But we as a faculty have to stand back and wait to see what the Sterling Board of Trustees, what's of interest to them in terms of the different proposals that are there. But glad to know that NVDA was listening in or part of that discussion.
Yeah, I think we're going to be part of a resource team if they go the direction we think they might. So.
Great. Yeah, thanks.
Any other business? I'll accept a motion to adjourn. Fred's motioning. Paul, you might as well.
Sure.
All right. Any objections to adjourning? That's an all in favor. Great. Have a good night, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we kept it to an hour. Yes.